Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining me today for another inspirational conversation. Today I have a very special guest. His name is Payman Hazir. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. And he is a fellow Leica shooters, a very talented photographer. He travels a lot. I have so many questions for you, Payman, but first off, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. So it's a pleasure being here and meeting you almost in person.
almost. We've been exchanging so much online, and I follow your work very closely because you are one of those photographers that make my feed stop when I scroll. Very, very nice use of black and white. But before we dive into the shooting and everything you do, for the people who don't know you, can you walk us through a bit of how you discovered photography and why you decided to invest so much time and effort into that craft?
All right. So, the short story is that it's quite straightforward. On a vacation with my dad and brother. I mean, this was probably more than 20 years ago. I think I was 22, 23 when we had that vacation. And I went out and bought old school, but back then it was probably a new school digital camera to basically just take vacation pictures. So first day we were on a beach. It was like a white beach, empty, and pair of black shoes on the beach, and I just went there and took a photo of it, and I had the camera in black and white mode. That was like instinctively there from the start, and just looking, I was like, wow, this was really, really fun, just one single shot. And that single shot sparked a big passion, which is photography, of course, for me. So since then I've been shooting photos and always black and white from the first shot.
This is incredible. So you are a purist in terms of your use of black and white. So you're telling us you never cheated with color at all since you took that shot?
I really admire good photographers that really know how to use colors. I have to admit, sometimes I get tempted and I'm there and trying. I'm just like, first of all, I'm good at it. Second, just sitting and editing black and white photos is just I feel such joy and satisfaction when I do that. So, I just keep it to black and white.
So speaking of black and white, so what do you find so interesting? I'm sure I know part of the answer. You're shooting also a monochrome sensor, which is very, very different than a filter array, like a color filter array on the other types of sensors. So, but what makes it so unique about that monochromatic, story that you're telling through the glass?
Yeah, I think for me is you have to work. I have to think differently when you don't have color involved, because when you have color, you can play around with, it can be backgrounds, it can be clothing in different colors and so on. But when it's black and white, I think for me the shot and the subject and the framing needs to be so freaking good, because you don't have any colors that can strengthen the image or make it interesting. So the subject and the framing needs to be so freaking strong. And I think that's what I like about it. I think for me, that's the utmost purest way of shooting, and the reason why I shoot black and white.
And you're attracted to portraiture, photojournalism. Is that something also that, the inspiration you get from other photojournalists or people that are more into portraiture, was that also part of the equation when you got inspired to shoot black and white?
No, but it was simply, from the beginning, I wasn't interested in photography at all. I was interested, I watched like old black and white photos of my dad when he was young. So that black and white kind of DNA was there from the beginning. And I wasn't interested in photography that much. I wasn't interested, when I started taking photos and got into photography, I wasn't that interested about other photographers either. I was very much into like my own mindset and what I wanted to do. And from that shoe I shot on the on the beach. I started shooting my mother, my dad, family run portraits. And I moved to the States to study marketing, and I started shooting people on the streets in the States. And that was what really like got me, okay, I'm pretty good at it. This is something that I really, really want to do. So, yeah.
I want to bring a quote that you have on your website, and you're saying that in the streets, Hazer Camera is an, or actually it's not you saying it, but maybe something else, somebody else. In the streets, Hazer Camera is an instrument that turns strangers into familiar faces. Can you talk about that? Because I think this is a very powerful quote about your photography.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that was actually a quote that Leica, I did an interview with them, Leica Photography International.
Nice.
The magazine. Yeah, so they were actually, that quote is from them. So I'm, of course, really happy about it. I think what I want to accomplish with the photos that I take on the streets is to close the gap between people that normally maybe wouldn't connect with the people I shoot. It can be, you know, people from ethical different backgrounds. It can be religion. It can be homelessness. It can be a variety of people in different situations. I want those pictures to feel so close and, very strong and close, so that people that view them get interested in about the story behind and want to know more and, creating that connection. So I think that's probably what they try to quote.
And that's a very good way to describe it. And if we take it a step further, you were also documenting the Black Lives Matter, protest and so on and so forth. So how did that came about, and how did you use your experience and everything you've learned so far in photography to translate what was going on the streets?
I mean, it was, I would say it was the first time. I mean, I'm from Iran. My family moved to Sweden when I was 8. And Sweden is a awesome country in all kinds of ways, but I mean, there's always been this underlying tension around immigration, and that's been growing throughout the years. And when this Black Matters and George Floyd death happened, there was a big movement in Sweden, and I think it was a lot of people, young, old, foreigners and immigrants from generations and generations, that this was kind of a fueling what they've been feeling throughout all of these years. The structural racism that is in Sweden and Europe. So that was a very, very strong moment for me, because I felt that I really need to, it was such a unique, not in a good way, but of course in a sad way, but still a unique period that I really, really need to document. Mm. So I tried to be out as much as I could, be wherever these kids, it was mainly kids that was out, and just documenting.
Yeah, and thank you for doing it, because your work is very, to your point, unique perspective on what was happening. We had a lot of media covering it. But it's very interesting to have street photographers bringing in, their perspective, their POV on everything that was happening. Speaking of style and, again, going back to the black and white aspect, I see that there's a lot of thought into, the light and the shadow, sometimes high key. So how do you decide to go like super dark and highlights or something more subtle? Walk us through a bit of your creative process when you're on the street. Do you shoot for the edit, or do you try to get it, in the camera as you see it in the end?
And that's something that I've been developed through a lot of years. So, as I shoot more and understand the camera more and understand how the different sensors and lenses work, the more I try to think ahead of when I'm taking a picture of someone, to really, really, figure out, okay, how is this going to look when I've shot the shot or taken the picture? Because if you do it right from the I don't have to edit that much. But when I started shooting Leicas with a Leica Q from the beginning, and then I did have to do a lot of editing on the files. But now I shoot with the M10 monochrome, and I don't have to do that much editing. So I try to figure out how the background looks, and you know, if I need to move the subject to a better background, keep it simple. You know, always trying to figure out, okay, how is the skin tone against the wall that I'm taking the shoot? And so trying to figure out as much as possible, plan as much as possible. I cannot wait to get it right from the beginning. So these days, I don't edit that much. I try to make that contrast happen by putting the subject into a context from the start.
And so speaking of which, this is not a gear show, but again, the listeners are always interested in learning how the artists actually capture, what tools they're using to capture their stories. So you evolved from, and I think you were Fujifilm like me also in the past. I saw you at an X-Pro or something like that. Yeah. So we all take the same path, and we end up with Leicas, which is very good. But so what was the idea behind going with an M system? Because you mentioned the Q, there's also a Q2 monochrome, which produces very, very beautiful files also, but you are stuck with 28. Was it the focal length that, you know, brought you to using an M system, or was it the whole shooting experience?
I mean, it was a little bit mixed bag. So the Q, I think when I got it, 28 millimeter, and being able to get close with the 28 meter, that totally transformed my imagery. So I really found my sweet spot with that camera. And then I moved on to the Q2 monochrome, which was a no-brainer for me. And I shot with them both for like about 4 years in total. And at some point during those, I think the past 2 years, I borrowed M10 cameras from my local dealer because I really, really love how they look and how they felt in the hand, much more than I did with the Q2. And I didn't get my head around this rangefinder thing, the manual focus. I think I borrowed it like 3 or 4 times. And then Leica sent me an M10 monochrome, and I was like, okay, let's try this out. And I opened my desktop, looked at the files, and I was absolutely blown away because the images and the files, they were just so beautiful. They were so strong, and you know, the density of the how the camera renders is just blew me up. And then so I just decided that I need to get my head around how to work with a rangefinder. And boy, you know, you just get into it and do it for a couple of months, then you're stuck. And now for me is, of course, how the M renders, but also the whole rangefinder experience and manual focus. So
yeah,
I'm totally in love with it. So, I try to, I've shifted to 35 millimeter, which is quite, I think I'm opposite around. A lot of people start with 35 and try to go broader. So I'm trying to see how a 35 can develop my shooting style.
The Kron or the Lux you have?
It's a Kron, the Apo.
Yeah. Oh man! Wow. Yeah. Okay. So you went all in.
All in. I understand that from the beginning now. To you know, just go for what you want from the start.
And, yep.
But I think all the 35 Apo on a monochrome camera is absolutely something different from any other lenses you put in there.
So we can say, payment. It was love at first file. That's how it went.
Exactly. That's such a very good way to know at first file. Every time, and I'm sometimes I just go out and take pictures. They're not good. I can take pictures of whatever, you know, I can wall or anything, just to come home and just tweak the files in the curves and just get blown away of how nice it is.
Speaking of being blown away, you still have to protect those highlights, right, on the M10 monochrome? Yeah, that's still a very unique way to resolve highlights.
Exactly. I mean, and you understand it. I think what's good about the M system and monochrome is that you become much more aware of what's going on around you in terms of light, shadows, highlights. Hmm. So also that's a good way of understanding photography even more when you use an M system.
I'm with you, man. I thought I could live without an M digital camera. I tried for a couple months and I failed miserably. Now I'm back with an M10R and I couldn't be happier. I still love my Q2, and but there's something about the M, and I have the M6, of course. So this is where I fell in love with the whole shooting experience. So, and again, for people who are listening who never shot an M camera, it's going to make you work hard, man. It's going to be harder than any other camera you've shot. But once you get it, once you get the hang of it, then it's very hard to actually shoot on anything else, to be quite honest.
When you learn the zone focusing, which takes a while, but once you get your head around it, it's just so easy, because it basically becomes a point and shoot camera.
Do you feel that it's because it was designed to be portable and, you know, street photography type of camera? Do you feel that it's a camera that people notice, don't notice, helps you, doesn't help you? Like, what's the feeling when you have that on the street versus, let's say, an X Pro that you shot just like me a couple years ago?
I mean, what's good about the monochrome, since it's just totally blacked out, nobody really
no red badge,
nothing. In street photography, you know, sometimes you end up in shady areas of different cities, which I love to explore. I've had a lot of people coming to me and say, yeah, I mean, is that an expensive camera? I'm like, this old thing? No, this is like a, you know,
it barely takes, you know, film and stuff.
Really, really old stuff. You know, don't buy one of these. I understand what they're after, and they're just like, okay, and just walk away. So nobody notices it.
Yeah, that's great. And I do sometimes black out the red dot when I travel because, you just said it. Sometimes people know that red dot and know how much it's worth. But to go back to your creative process, the portion where do you interact with the subject you take photos of, is that something that you do systematically, and or are you more, you know, capturing it more subtly and so on and so forth?
When I take my portraits, I always interact 10 out of 10 times.
Wow.
Because that's an important part of getting a good portrait, to get that connection and so on. It's interesting. I spoke to a friend, you know, he was joining me to take, you know, see me taking portraits. And I told him that if it's a subject that I'm like, I just look at someone and it's like, wow, then everything, you know, and all the thinking around, should I go, or, you know, oof, do I dare to go and say hi, it just disappears. I become a robot that just approach that person and like, hi, I really love how you look, or, you know, these tattoos look awesome, I need to take your portrait. I become like 200% confident.
you literally say, I need to take your portrait?
Yeah, I need to take your portrait, you know, I'm not going to take a no. And then like, okay, then we go. But if it's some subject that I'm not 100% sure about, or then I become a little bit shy and I start thinking, you know, oh, how should I approach that person? And when you start doing that, then that kind of kills your entire vibe about that, because the emotions take over. So the better the subject is, or the stronger that I feel about that subject, the less I think about, the heart being, you know, what you call it, being shy about going and asking people, because I'm a shy person and I consider myself an introvert. So it takes a lot of energy for me to go to people, strangers in the street, and taking their portraits. So.
But then you look at the file and the image, and that gives you back the energy, I hope.
Yeah. Yeah. And also once you start talking to people, most of the times, you know, I realize how nice people are.
Yeah.
Even though that they don't look that nice.
Yeah. No, exactly. You don't judge a book by its cover. That's definitely something I've learned in the 43 years I've been on this planet.
Some of the hardest looking guys or girls are actually the nicest people that I've met.
And they make great photos.
Exactly. They make great photos.
So Payman, talk to me about the fact that you started to do long-term projects, and we were discussing pre-show about that, you and I, because I was sharing with you that I'm a bit overwhelmed with social media, and I don't want to spend, you know, time on it, literally. I want to use it to promote longer-term projects. So, and you've been very active on that front. If you look at, you know, your website, I'm looking at Silent Messages, Percussion, Black Lives Matters, Bent But Not Broken. So how do you come up with all those ideas, and how do you go about starting? Because that's the most difficult part, starting a new project.
Yeah, so, I mean, I at some point, just like you, I mean, I realized that I was out for the quick fixes. You know, going out, taking that picture or portrait that would give me a lot of likes, because then that's gonna grow, and I'm gonna grow my audience on Instagram and so on. I kind of got tired of doing that, because you start doing, I'm almost had a formula of, if I do this, take this sort of picture, I know it's gonna generate likes. And for me, that's not what photography was about. So that played a part. And my process around long-term projects actually started with, I had a lot of photos that wasn't portraits, like street photography, documentary stuff. And I tried to, so I basically looked up all those photos and to see, is there a pattern of what caught my attention throughout the years. So I could, you know, it could be a body of work that is during 4 or 5 years. Mm. Just went through them and saw that, you know, there is a red thread around different subjects. That I picked those photos into different albums. So it was almost a reverse way of thinking around projects, when you actually decide, I'm going to go out and take pictures and search for this. But I did it the opposite around, and then that's how I realized the power of having projects and long-term projects. So I don't know if that makes sense, but
absolutely. And would that be the case for let's say Bent But Not Broken type of project? So you went into your archive, and do you still keep adding to your existing project? How do you decide if a project is done, or is it always on? Like, what's your view on that?
I think I have them open until I feel that I am done.
Okay.
Like I'm just repeating myself.
Yeah.
Then I would say, okay, I have to move on.
Yeah.
Because now I'm just repeating my work. But at the moment, I mean, all of my projects are open, and I constantly, it's a creative process around finding a subject. To create a project around. So, yeah.
Definitely. And you have one of those projects about your hometown, right? So I guess Stockholm is where you live. Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is something that I know a lot of photographers are struggling with. They think they need to travel to see different, you know, different stuff. But you've been able to capture, a bit like Phil Penman does in New York.
Yeah.
You've been able to tell stories about your hometown. So how about that? How do you document your hometown without being, you know, feeling like uninspired and, oh, you know, it's something that I saw every day when I go to work or something like that?
As you said, my thinking around that was, I always was down talking the city I lived in, the city I love.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't take any good pictures here. You know, the city sucks for street photography. I need to go to New York. I need to go to Barcelona. But then someone looked at my album of portraits. And they were like, wow, you know, where do you find these people? I mean, you have to travel a lot. But when I realized that actually a lot of the majority of those photos are in Sweden.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, maybe it's not that bad shooting at home. I mean, that was how it started. And then I don't have a red thread around what I'm documenting in Stockholm where I live, because I just want to fill it up with photos and trying to figure out how I feel. What is it with Stockholm that I want to document that is not, and you know, super obvious? I want to document homelessness or, you know, something like that. So I really am trying to thinking about what is beautiful about Stockholm. What is the melancholia in Stockholm that I want to capture?
So I love what you're saying, because a project can be, you know, not necessarily define, and the red thread or the common thread will actually emerge from spending time on that project. I love that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think it's a good way of not narrowing yourself too much, because you have to be open, and you have to be, you know, let your creative mindset being open about what's gonna stick. And if you're too narrow in how you think about it, I think then you're gonna lose a lot of good stuff.
A question I like to ask, and that is very tough, and I sometimes change my mind on it, but for you personally, what makes a good image? Not necessarily one that you took, but when you look at an image, you're like, wow, this is an image that moves me, or that I like.
Yeah. Composition. Obviously, rule number one, it needs to be black and white.
So sorry to all the jokery of this world and stuff. Sorry, your photos are not good. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm going to like it, but I'm not going to go hard, you know, wow about it. So obviously, black and white. The second thing is composition. Got it. When I see someone combining those two things, oh my God, it's I can just sit and look at that photo for days. Hmm. And there is a particularly good guy called Jan Grarup, which is a Danish photographer, war photographer, actually. Okay. His ability to work with composition is just mind-blowing.
So a time of war?
During that time of war.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it's like, wow, how can you even be that present in a moment where bombs are bombshelling, and you're still able to, figure out your composition. So I think composition in combination with black and white, that's just boom.
So it's really good. It's a good thing I posted 3 black and white photos earlier today in honor of Payman and his love for black and white. I don't know if they're good, but they're black and white.
You good?
I don't know. So Payman, where do you get your inspiration? Is it through books? Is it through conversation? Is it through online, platforms? Where how do you stay motivated?
I think the mood. I mean, it's obviously what kind of mood I am in. So music plays a big role. So I get into the mood. Music has always been central in my creativity. So when I listen to music, I can come up with images in my mind. Like I come up with these images that I think of, and those images become inspiration of what I'm searching for when I'm on the street. And those, it's not like a daily thing, but it's more of a long periods where I have this imagery in my mind and what kind of photos that I want to take. So that's one part. Until now, I haven't been interested in reading books or trying to get so much external influence into what I do. But I'm reading more and more books, and I think books are, it's hard because it's so easy to start copying someone.
I agree.
I can take that situation, but I want to be inspired, but not too inspired by other photographers.
I can understand.
Yeah.
After reading an Alex Webb book, like literally my 100 next photos were all layered, like multiple layers and stuff. And I'm like, whoa, what am I doing? This is, I'm copying Alex Webb, and I'm not pretending that I can even about enjoying copying him. But I it's true. But I do agree that a mix of different sources is a great way to stay motivated, but also spending time on your own craft and developing your own vision. And we joked about Phil Penman earlier, but that's something that really came out of the interview I've done with him, is that, develop your own voice, spend time thinking about what is important to you. And I like to push it even further and say, when you wake up in the morning, pick up the camera, ask yourself, why? Why am I doing this? That's an even better question than how and what are my settings and is it going to be liked on Instagram, to your earlier point.
Yeah.
So but it's not easy to stay motivated in a world, and this is my next question to you. I like asking this question because it's very fresh news. In a world where AI can create images on itself, by itself, what do you think the place of a photographer is in 2023 and onward?
It's coming, obviously, and it's just the beginning. And if you just see what AI can do, you know, now, which is basically a beginning of you know, that era, is just mind-blowing. I definitely think that a lot of production work will be gone, or AI would be able to do it.
I mean, product photography and stuff, yeah.
Photography, fashion photography, I mean, a lot of that stuff is going to be done by AI. I do think that there's still going to be creative people that needs to generate ideas to whether it's AIs. I mean, for me, AI is just a tool of...
Just like a camera, yep.
Just a camera, so it's just a different tool. And I really admire those AI, I don't know, creatives.
Artists, whatever. I don't know what we call them. Yeah, it's too new.
that are able to come up with this amazing, you know, creative ideas that creates this. Some of these AI shots are just wow. I mean, a lot of them are like this. The street photography that would be. Imagine if that was street photography. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
However, so I think, you know, there's still need to be a lot of creative people, and you're gonna use AI as a tool. Or your camera as a tool, but I do believe that it's totally gonna disrupt production photography, commercial photography, to a quite large extent.
If I'm a product photographer today, I'm literally learning new things because it won't be my job in 5 years. That's the one thing I know.
One thing, unless you become really, really good at directing an AI
to exactly. Do
amazing hamburger photo. So I mean that's my short view of AI.
And speaking of evolution of cameras and technology, there's something anti all of this shooting Leica cameras. I hate to go back to the gear, but it's kind of a statement to say. And although they're fully packed with technology, but the way you operate them is kind of an homage to how photography started. You know, several hundred years ago or 100 years ago for Leica cameras. So how do you like shooting with a tool that is basically everything that's not trending right now? The brand is trending, but that how to operate a camera is not, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really good question. And my first camera was a Canon EOS, I think it was 300D. And I tried to buy the, you know, the biggest lens I could find, because that was my idea of being a photographer.
Like a zoom lens?
Yeah, like a big zoom lens. I want the camera to be big and stand out. And then I stopped carrying that camera with me because it was too large.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then I got, I think I saw a X-Pro 1 and I was like, wow, this is a beautiful camera. And then I bought it. I love how it felt in my hand, and that it reminded me of old cameras, like rangefinder cameras. But you know, from that point, I've been more and more comfortable with the simplicity of the tool that I use, and that tool, the more I can control it in a simple way, then the more satisfaction do I get without out of the photography. So I think for me, getting the M camera, it was the fact that I didn't want to use an EVF because I wanted to see the reality of how it looked.
So you don't use the VisoFlex at all?
I don't use the VisoFlex. When I get too close, I have to use the
Live View.
The Live View. So I really enjoy it. And I think that if I miss a shot, I know that I am not... it was me. It wasn't I don't have to rely on autofocus or something less. So I like to be in focus or in control. And in that sense, having a camera where it's, totally manual, I mean, that's just perfect tool for me.
Yeah, it's again, very anti-camera industry that are trying to sell automation, computational photography. If you look at a Sony, nothing against Sony, there are a lot of great Sony shooters out there, but the camera does 80% of the work for you. So that's, again, depends on what you're trying to do with your photography. If you are currently a commercial product photographer, you might want to speed up the process, get more through a day, and rangefinder might not be the answer for you. Although I know some that are still using M cameras for, you know, fashion and product.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, to the point of AI, I do believe that it's going to be very polarized. So either it's going to be like, you know, you need to be efficient around it, and it's AI, or you want to have that really, really authentic shot. Yeah. Then I think brands and whatever, whoever is going to buy those shots, probably going to ask for, like, they want it to be taken on like an M6 or M7 yep. film. So it's, I think it's going to be that very, very polarized view on imagery.
I agree. Yeah. Right now, I think it's struggling a bit with the hands. That's something that I saw. Like it cannot render, for some reason, cannot render the hands like perfectly.
Yeah, I didn't notice until I read about it. And then the only time, you know, I only see bad hands.
Yeah. Now you only see that. But in your pictures, the hands are beautiful. And I'm looking at a photo that actually LFI highlighted at first in a series of photos. It's a photo of a gentleman who has his hand up like that. And there's something so powerful about the look in his eyes, the hand in the air. So can you help us understand, you know, what goes through your mind when you're trying to tell a story? Because I'm sure the gentleman, you know, agreed to that photo, like you mentioned, because you talked to him. So how do you direct on the street? This is not a studio setup. You don't have a light or anything. You just boom. You know, you have to be quick, to be fast. So how do you do that? How do you do that?
I mean, that particular guy is a black man holding his fist up in the air, and that was during the Black Lives Matter protest, which was going on for weeks in Stockholm. And this guy, I just saw him walking down the street, and he was holding his hand up. And he was really, really, like, you could see that proudness or strength aura around him. So I just approached him and just said, hi, I'm a photographer. Just, you know, start talking to him. And he said he's been, you know, holding his hand up as long as he had been able to.
Like no blood in the hand anymore.
during the weeks, exactly.
Yeah.
Because, I think when I spoke to him, his story was that he was like, all of a sudden he was being seen and heard during the Black Lives Matter protests. So he'd been marginalized for forever, even as long as been around, according to him. But now he felt that he was empowered, and he, you know, he was part of a movement. He mattered, and he got a voice through all these protests. And he was holding his fist up. So that was a very powerful moment. And I want that fist to be, you know, his photo to be as simple as possible and get the fist to really, really stick out. So I moved him from the street, which was very busy, to I think it was a white background.
Yeah.
To create that simple look. So,
well,
and that's something. Yeah, so I like to move around my subjects. I mean, we don't walk for minutes, but, you know, if I just look around and I see, okay, if you can we move just 2 steps away to get this thing out of the way or so on. Or unless it's something I really want to have into the frame as a time mark, a time stamp on. It can be a retailer, you know, something in the background to show during which times I took the photo.
Well, I can tell you that this photo is timeless. This photo is powerful. The look in his eyes, the fist up, the use of black and white, the white background. I'm obsessed by it. So,
thanks.
Can I buy it? Where can we buy your prints?
Gift it to you.
So, let's move on from you know, the image making process to being an artist, but also having photography as. You're a bit like me. We have photography as probably 50% of our life, but there's also other stuff we do. So how do you compose with, you know, having a job, having other stuff to do, and fitting in photography into all of that and making it happen day in and day out?
I mean, that's something that I've been thinking about for many years. And I was in conflict with myself because I have a job where I'm running a creative agency. But I consider myself being a kind of a business guy because it's a relatively big agency. And I have to think in that role, I have to think very commercially about my job. And I was a photographer during my spare time. And for me, these two personas were very separated for many, many years until I just realized that I don't have to decide. I don't have to put myself in neither one of them.
There you go.
Because I enjoy both of them. I don't think I would have enjoyed photography as much as I do if that was my job. Unless I get to, you know, travel around the world and do some only the amazing stuff that you do, and not shooting burgers or cars or just having to pay your bills, which is a big part of being a photographer, I assume. So for me, it was okay. I have these two professions. I don't need to choose. I don't have to put myself in any boxes. So. I want to be a creatively led and creative, person that runs an agency.
Yeah.
And I try to, and I embraced my creativity by letting that influence my work, by my day-to-day job.
It's music to my ears, Payman, because I think you and I have a similar background. I'm in marketing and communication and advertising, and also I'm a photographer, and only recently that I decided to update the LinkedIn little description of what you do in life, and it was always like VP marketing, this and that, and I recently added podcast host. This is what I'm doing right now with you, and published photographer, because I am, and I'm not shy. I was shy and to have those two aspects of my life being exposed on a work platform. But now I'm actually proud of it, and it opened up new doors, and it opened up new connection, because people are like, you're also a photographer? Okay, can you talk to me about it? Can you shoot this? Can you do this? Can you do that? So I think it's bang on, and maybe it's that thing when you told me, I won't reveal the age you told me. I don't know if you want me to reveal it, but we're about the same age. And I guess we'll say men in their 40s, we'll just put it this way. Yeah. And I guess you come to a point where you're like, you know what? I don't care what people think. I don't care if, I'm mixing two different things that don't necessarily are obvious together. But for I like what you're saying, when one feeds the other, and actually you become a better marketer or better agency guy and a better photographer because of it, then it's I see it as a win-win situation,
Absolutely. And I've learned that from the younger generation, because I think they're more prone to think about multiple income, if you want to talk about income, or profession. Oh yeah,
some of them have 15 different revenue streams.
I mean, which I think is absolutely fantastic, because you shouldn't put yourself into a box that limits you, and try to embrace the the talents that you have, the interests that you have, and try to combine them for a better cost or better good.
Yeah. I really like that approach, and as you can see, I'm also trying new stuff. I mean, on YouTube and here, not for the money, but to diversify the approach. And hey, if I can, find a way to make it productive and also make some money, I'll explore that option too. And this is where, to your point, the business side or the business guy comes out and say, maybe there's an opportunity there.
Exactly. And I think that's I think we're on the same page. We spoke about that earlier, it's a good thing.
So when we are business guys, we happen to travel a lot. We touch upon the fact that yes, you can shoot at home and be very inspired, but of course, traveling is great. Traveling is a gift. I see you traveling all around the world. You see me traveling all around the world. What's the destination where you were like, I'm so glad I'm a photographer. I'm so glad I have my camera.
I think Barcelona is, I mean, I go there now and then. It's just, I mean, it's something with the shooting in black and white, obviously I'm very aware of the light and how backgrounds play out. I assume you do the same thing if you shoot color for that matter.
Yeah.
But the light and the tonality in that city is just amazing. I mean, it probably doesn't matter if you shoot black and white or color. It's just really, really good. So that's one location that I travel to through work quite a lot, and London as well. London is a little bit tricky, but
well, black and white in London's perfect. It's always raining, always gray, so you can push those, you know, shadows and stuff.
Yeah. No, so I think London and Barcelona is places that I go to often.
It's my last trip to Europe was Barcelona, and I agree. I shoot color mostly, so the light was just how the light was was coming through the city, hitting on the wall, and I had like my dress shirt in the. Yeah. In the drawer there, and I don't know, that it was just different. I was like, oh my god, I was taking photos of how the light was hitting in the building I was in. So and of course, yeah, the city is just beautiful, gorgeous, and people on the street are active, they're interacting, and yeah, so on and so forth. So that for me is the perfect type of backdrop for street photography.
Yeah, I mean, if you come from Sweden, life is a lot. I mean, we have like absolute darkness and misery.
Well, I'm from Montreal, so I can relate the 6 months of the year. Yes.
Yeah, we have the same type of climate, I think.
Exactly.
Which life is indoors.
Exactly.
A lot of the time. So being in Barcelona, it's like you see this life is being out on the street.
Yeah.
That's just so nice to be in the center of it and taking street photos.
Absolutely. So Payman, what's next for you? What are the next projects you're working on? Or is there something you're looking forward to for your photography? What are you working on?
I mean, I am continuing with my open projects, which I add photos to. I'm thinking about some projects, and one of them is I always start with a title. So yep. This is to translate it right into English from Swedish is stories that wasn't told.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and that is
stories. Yeah, that's cool.
Untold stories. It sounds much more beautiful in Swedish.
I'm pretty sure.
And the background with that is that I asked my dad, because we are immigrants from Iran that fled to Sweden. So I did the whole, you know, immigration camp, all of that, my family. So I asked my dad how I wanted to know the story about. What happened when we fled? Like what was going on? How do you feel about it? I hesitated to ask this for many, many years. I just asked him a few years ago because I don't think emotionally I knew what he was going to tell me, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't ready to handle the stuff. So he told me quite a remarkable story about how scared he was and how he panicked in different situations and what happened. And one part of the story was that he was flying. He sent me and my mom to Sweden, and then he was taking a flight from, I think it was from Thailand, from Iran through Thailand and to Sweden. And he panicked on the airplane. He was so nervous to start drinking. And he's not used to drink.
He got hammered.
Yeah, he got hammered and panicked out. So he flushes down his passport in the toilet.
No, you're kidding.
No, so and then he.
So they haven't landed. Like they're in air.
That's a big idea. For some reason, the plane didn't go directly to Stockholm. It had to land in. It was got rescheduled while they were on the flight to make a landing in Denmark, Copenhagen. So he gets off the plane. Totally panicked, he goes to a SAS steward and ask information desk, says, you know, trying to explain that my family is in Stockholm, I'm fleeing Iran. I think he couldn't speak that much good English, so I think she understood the situation. He grabs his hand, walk him to the next flight when the Stockholm flight is going from Denmark. Speaks to the people that are, you know, checking in passengers. They let him on the flight to Stockholm.
Even without the proper papers and stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
They understood. Yeah.
Yeah, they understood what was going on. So that for me, that was a very, like, he always said that was my guardian angel. Otherwise, I would have been stuck. I don't know what things. So then I realized that, you know, there must be so many stories that you, because when you talked, when you want to apply for immigration, you have to sit to a gentleman or a lady or you know, authority to describe what's going on, and you don't tell that story. I flushed down my passport.
No, that's not a very popular story to tell the those people.
I thought there must be a lot of stories that are really, really strong and that haven't been told. So I have an idea of taking a set of series of portraits and writing around those stories and put that together in a book that I think a lot of people in Sweden would appreciate to read.
Well, for me, Payman, that's a definition of starting with why. You know, you don't ask yourself, why am I doing this? No, you know exactly why. And it goes back to your roots, and it goes back to the process of your family in a new country. Wow, this is, I'm having goosebumps. I want to buy it, and you don't even have, you know, have written the first line of that book.
I will start with this year. And
good.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, Payman, I want to thank you for your time, because this has been such a great conversation. And if people want to see the work, the beautiful black and white work that you do, where should I direct them?
My Instagram page is probably the place to go to. Is Paymanon, PayMannen.
There you go.
Remember that?
Yeah, I'll put the links down below, by the way.
Yeah, I think that's a smart thing. Or just use it my webpage, which is the same thing, .com, paymanon.com.
There you go.
Thank you, too. Yeah, if you want to look at my stuff, I think that's also a thing with Instagram and phones. I mean, photos are, first and foremost, they should be viewed as prints.
I agree.
But if not prints on a big, you know, laptop screen. So go to my webpage. I hope you enjoy what you see. Get inspired. Not too inspired from my work, because you have
develop your own voice.
Yeah, exactly. It's been really, really great talking to you, Fred. I mean, I'm a big fan. I've been watching your YouTube channel. When is Leica stuff in there? A lot of Leica stuff. So it's really nice to speak to you.
Same here, Payman, and thank you so much for your generosity, your time. If you want to give this podcast a 5-star review, I would appreciate it. This helps other photographers go in there and learn more about the great photographers around the world. And I've been Fred Ranger. If you want to connect with me, I'm Fred Ranger on all the platforms. Payman just mentioned YouTube and Twitter and Instagram and all this great stuff. So I wish you a very, very good reminder of the week, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.